Okay. Page 1028. We're in the middle of the mitzvah about a king. Okay, the Torah is saying in Pasuk Yudalad, which we learned already, you come to the land, and you'll conquer the land, and you'll say, I want a king. And like we learned last time, when the Jews, there's a mitzvah to appoint a king. When the Jews came into Israel, there are three mitzvahs to do. Conquer Amalek, appoint a king, and build a Beis HaMikdash. These were the three mitzvahs that the Jews were obligated to do. Yet, when the people came to Shmuel HaNavi and said, we want a king, Shmuel HaNavi got angry at them, and he said, why are you asking for a king? What's wrong with the prophets? What's wrong with God himself? So everybody asked, but this is a mitzvah in the Torah, that when they come into Israel, they need to make a king. So the answer is, because they didn't want a king because God wanted it as a mitzvah. They wanted a king, they said, let's be like all the goyim. But the purpose of a Jewish king, as we discussed and we'll discuss more, is to guide the people how to be proper Jews. It's not for power and might, dictatorship. In fact, as we'll see, the being a king is actually becoming a slave of the people rather than the dictatorship. Okay, so it says in positive of just part of this, same Tosim Melech HaMelech, you should place a king over you. Okay, Pasuk Tazayin. Same Tosim Melech HaMelech Asher Yivcha Hashem Lekecha by that God chose. Mikerev Achach V'mitziv your brothers. Tosim Melech HaMelech. So first of all, the question is, what's this double expression, same Tosim Melech HaMelech? Okay? Put, you should put. Now, normally, the Rashi says many times in the Gemara, when the Torah repeats itself, like a giving example, hechech techich, admonish, you should admonish. The double expression means even 100 times. Himatze means even if it's found 100 times, you have to give it back. Tzedek, right. What does it mean? Same tasa malach melech. So it's very different opinions. What's the double expression? Okay? Some people say it means whether it's the king or the king's son. Same tasim alach melech. In other words, it means one is to appoint the king, and what the other one is to appoint him over you. Now, the people shouldn't think that because they appointed the king, they can control the king. The Torah says, same tasim alach melech. Number one, appoint the king, and you should realize the king is over you. Why is it over you? Because you understand that God shows him. And it's interesting, the story we said last time very briefly, Shmuel HaNavi, after Shaul was diskinged, okay, because he didn't kill out Amalek, so Shmuel HaNavi was told to, by Hashem, to go to Yishai's house. He came to Yishai, he looked at his firstborn, his name was Eliyav, and Shmuel looked at him, and he said, this guy is fit to be a king. So Hashem said to him, he says, Al tabet al marehu, don't judge a people by the looks. Ki ha'adam, there's a pasuk, but Hashem said it's to Shmuel, when he was appointing, he wanted to appoint Yishai's oldest son as a king. So Hashem said to him, don't look at his looks. Because people look, he says, Ha'adam Yiraleinayim. People see by the eyes, and God sees by the heart. And that's why the Pasuk says, when you appoint the king, it has to be somebody God chose. Because you might not know who to choose. Outwardly, the person could look great. He might be a very great person. But what's going on inside, only God himself knows. And therefore, a king has to come, when it says, Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokecha Bo'i, that God appoints him as the king. What is the double expression of St. Tosin, like we just started saying, that the Torah says, you need to fear the king. Okay? And not, what does it mean, fear the king? And they quote the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. It says, you should always daven for the welfare of the kingdom. Avei mispalu b'shlomo shel malchus. Because if people wouldn't fear the kingdom, everybody would swallow each other up. Yeah. In other words, not only, the Torah is telling you, when you appoint a king, you're talking about authority, governing body, you need to fear the king, Because if you don't fear the king, then you have chaos. Then you have no set established laws of decency and morality and so on and so forth. And so it says like this. The Gemara says, the king asked, the people have to fear the king, and the fear of the people has to be on the king. In other words, the king needs to fear and respect the people also. There's no such thing as dumb dictatorship and dirty ones. Okay. Then it says like this, Mikerev achicha tosim alach ha-melech. You're not allowed to appoint a person who's not Jewish. You're not allowed to appoint a ger, a convert, as a king. It has to be Mikerev achicha. It has to be one from the person who's Jewish from birth. He has to be appointed to the king. And as the pasuk says, "Leisucha lasis alach ish nachri," you cannot appoint a person who's a foreigner. Okay, and here the commentators explain a much deeper concept. You need to appoint a king that feels for the people. If the king doesn't feel for the people, then he's what's called a nachri. He's a foreigner. The Torah says a king needs to feel the people. And therefore the Torah says, Mikerev achecha, it has to be from your midst, a brother from your midst, who understands the plight and the life of a Jew. If you have a foreigner, he's not going to understand the plight of a Jew, and he will never be, asher le'achicho, he's not your brother, he's never going to appreciate what it means to be a king. In other words, the purpose of the king. And the Rebbe makes a very interesting note. The Rambam has the expression that the king is the heart. This is what the Rambam makes in Hilchos Melachim. Shamelech hu lev kol Yisrael. The king is the heart of the Jewish people. What's the heart? What's the difference between... Why isn't he the brain of the Jewish people? Well, the king, the Rambam doesn't say is the Moach, the Rosh. He's the head of the Jewish people, but the Rambam uses the expression, the king is the lev, kol Yisrael, the heart. The difference between the head and the heart, generally speaking, even physically, an intellectual is always removed from the people. An emotional person is with the people. Even physically, the heart serves all the limbs of the person. It pumps the blood and gives blood everywhere. The mind, yeah, it's the willpower and the understanding, but it's still removed from the person much more than the heart is. And that's why the heart is in the middle of the body, and the head is really on top of the body. So the definition of a king, the pasuk says, has to be mikerev achecha. It has to be somebody who feels for the Jewish people and understands for the Jewish people. And if he can't, then he can't be a king. It's not the description of a king. The description of a king has to be one who actually feels it.
Mikrev means close.
What? Mikrev
means close.
No, mikrev means from amidst of your brothers. Mikrev it means from the midst, but it's interesting. Kerev is the stomach. It's the inside. But no, here it means just mikerev achachov. It has to be from your brothers. It has to be a person who is part of the Jewish people. Okay. Now, lakliyabalesis. He can't have, there's three mitzvahs that a king is given. He cannot have a lot of horses. And it explains la yoshiv es ha'am mitzrayma, that he shouldn't bring back the people to Egypt. L'mad harbei sus, to have a lot of horses. V'Hashem amar lachem, Hashem said, v'yisifun l'shuv baderech hazaid. You cannot to go back to Egypt. Okay, and then it says like this. V'leyab, I just want to say these. There's a lot to talk about here. V'leyab l'inoshim, you cannot have many wives. He said last week, David HaMelech, the amount is 18. A king cannot have more than 18 wives. One's enough, but anyway, I guess in those times they needed more. David the Melech had six wives, and Nasan HaNavi said to him, some pasuk in Melachim, if it's not enough, I will make chahena v'chahena. He said, if this is not enough for you, I'll make it chahena v'chahena. Here, this Rashi quotes him, the pasuk in Shmuel. In Ma'at, this is what Nasan HaNavi said to him, a sifala chahena v'chahena. So the Gemara learns out, chahena v'chahena means 6 times 6 is 18. There's an interesting argument between the Rambam and the Ravid. Does that mean with the concubines or without the concubines?
What does it mean?
You know what a pilegish is?
No.
A pilegish, well, it's also machlek is what it is. A pilegish is a wife that you don't, that you're married to without a ksuba.
Sire. They can do 100.
I don't speak French.
Goyim, they have a sweet sire. They make a sire.
Jews also do.
For 1 minute, 2 minutes?
Hagar was a pilagish of Avram.
Yeah.
Yeah, last week's Pasha. Hagar was a pilagish of Avram. So there's a machlek, Rambam and Ravid, if it means 18, including pilakshim, or in wives, 18. You can have more pilakshim. But whatever it was, now, the Torah says like this, you cannot have a lot of horses. Why? Because the best horses in those days came from Egypt. The Torah says, if you can have a lot of horses, like Shlomo Melech, all these three things, Shlomo Melech did not keep properly. Taka had a lot of horses, and he brought the people back to Egypt. And the Torah says, you can't have you can't go back to Egypt. What does it mean? So the Gemara says, what does it mean? How many horses could he have? Only horses that he needs for the army. Stop to have horses sitting around doing nothing. Collection is not enough. That's no good. He can only have enough that he needs for the army. Women, wives, we said 18. And how much money? Only to take care of the bills and the army and you know, all those things that he needs. There's a very interesting...
What's the difference between that time? The king and the Kohen Gadol?
Kohen Gadol was a Kohen Gadol. He's the king. What do you mean? Kohen Gadol was from a Kohen, and the king was from Shevet Yehuda. What do you mean? What was the difference between them? Who was greater?
Power, yeah.
Kohen Gadol didn't have power. Kohen Gadol had Kedusha. We mentioned last week, in fact, we're going to get there. He brings down, he just makes a kitzur of all the mission Sanhedrin. There's a lot of dinim that a king had to have. For instance, when the Kohen Gadol, we said this last week, privately came to the king, the king stood up for the Kohen Gadol. When a Navi came to the king, the Navi bowed to the king. Okay? But in public,
yes.
Only nobody, the king got up for nobody. Everybody in the public, king was number one.
Was getting a haircut every day?
The king.
King or the...
Kohen Gadol got once a week.
Once a week. The king every day.
Every day. King got a haircut every day. You imagine? Every day he went to the beauty parlor. What was there to cut already? But that's the Mishnah. The Mishnah says something. We'll see. The dinam of a king we'll get to soon. There's a very interesting thing from this parasha. Women might not like it, but I do. The pasuk says, same tasa melech melech. Okay? And the Gemara learns out, melech v'lay malka. Okay, the halacha is that there's only a king, there's no such thing as a woman queen. No, because in Torah law it says, same tasa melech melech, and the Gemara learns out, melech v'lay malka. And then the halacha goes even further. And this is a very, very interesting discussion. You would need, because there's articles written in the Sinhalacha. 30 pages, 50 pages of articles in this. Rambam writes, not only a king, by any public office of power, a woman is not allowed to be in. In fact, there's a very interesting test in modern day show business. Is a woman allowed to be on a synagogue board? And there's halachas arguments. Some would say yes, some say no, because according to the halacha that in any public shurora, any leadership, and then they ask the question, what's with Dvora? Dvora was a neviyah, and Vishefetah says Yisrael, she was a judge, and a woman can be a judge. So Taisif answers that it's a unique situation. Hashem said that Dvora was a neviyah. That's it. But not a neviyah. There were seven neviyahs. There were seven women. The Gemara says in Megillah, there were seven Chana, Sarah, Avigail. I mean, there were seven women prophets. But to be a shofet, to be a judge, according to Allah, a woman can be a judge. So the commentators of the Gemara talk about how can Devorah be a judge? He said, Tosfos answered two answers. One is, Hashem said so, so that was it. There was an exception to the rule. Another opinion, she didn't actually judge, he advised, and they call her a judge. But it's a very interesting question. In Torah law, is a woman allowed to be a prime minister of Israel? Is a woman allowed to be a president of a synagogue? Is a woman allowed to be on a synagogue board? There's a lot of opinions, and a lot of religious shuls do it. They don't even know that there's a question in halacha. That's a separate issue, like a lot of other things. It's an extremely complicated issue. And according to many poskim, they can sit on a board as an advisory committee, not as a decisive committee. Not to make decisions. This is all based on this possibility. Same Tosfos Melech HaMelech. As an advisor, not as definitive things.
How about Esther, Queen Esther?
Esther wasn't a Jew. They made her.
She was a Jew.
No, I'm talking about.
She was a Jew.
Yeah, but I'm saying it was a Goyish country, a Chashverish. So, no, the question is, in a Jewish country, you can't have a Malkah.
So, they can be president, ladies, Malkah.
So he had Golda Meir also. I mean, prime minister, all the Charedim, the Charedim, that they're screaming, Tornisht, Usser. The Traifa Medina, the Traifa Medina that they were saying. They just added it to the list of things. But no, this is what the Gemara learns up in this passage, Saint Tosfos Melech HaMelech.
This is only using in Israel. That's the law.
No. This is anywhere of Shurara. This is Rambam. The Rambam says this. A Shurara of any type of leadership, it would be an issue.
Why they say every man is success is woman behind him?
The truth is, a lot of people want women on the synagogue board because they're the ones that get things done. I'm not joking. That's the truth of the matter.
Actually, they do it, but in not obvious. They are all remoting the king, remoting the man, remoting the man. Actually,
I'm just reading. This is the, who's it called? This is, I think, the Rambam. Probably this is the quote of the Rambam. No, it's a medrash, it's a free. But the Rambam means a down. Eim amid an ishu b'malchus. You're not allowed to appoint a woman as king. Shnema lecha melech v'lei malcha. V'chein k'chol masimis shebi Yisrael. All appointments. Eim amanim b'am ele ish. Okay? And then he said, you can't appoint a king from somebody who had a disgusting type of a business, like a tanner, or a barber, or these types of things that the people wouldn't respect, and all of a sudden he becomes a king, so they wouldn't respect him either. Okay, so the Torah basically says like this, coming back to the Pesuk we're at. He cannot have a lot of horses, because it's forbidden for a Jew to go back to Egypt. So it's interesting, when the Rambam brings down this halacha, that a Jew is not allowed to go back to Egypt, all the commentators of the Rambam asked, the Rambam lived in Egypt.
That's interesting.
Lived in Egypt. Not only the Ramban, the Radvaz, there's so many Gedolei Yisrael that lived in Egypt. And the Torah says he can't go back to Egypt. So there's three answers to the question. First of all, the Rambam, they say about the Rambam, they answer about the Kassim Mishnah says about the Rambam, why did the Rambam live in Egypt? Because he was forced to by the government. It wasn't willingly he lived there. They took him as a doctor and they forced him to live there. It's not that he wanted to live there. But there's a lot of answers like this. It says in the Pasuk here also, you can't go back to Egypt. And many of the Rishonim bring this down in the Rambam over there, that you can't go back to Egypt the way the Jews left Egypt. It has the road that the Jews took out of Egypt, the Torah says, don't go back.
The same
pattern. At the end of Pasuk to Zion. So the Pasuk clearly says, really, you can't go back this road. That's one answer. Another answer is that when did the Torah forbid to live in Egypt? That's when the Egyptian nation lived in Egypt. I'll explain this then in a second. And the third one was only temporarily, and it wasn't permanent in all generations. Other Pasukim say, you can go back for business. Okay? But here it says that you can only go, somebody Shainim learned, you can only not go back to Egypt when the nation of Egypt lived there. Okay? So the Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolos, who was a Rishon, writes, today that doesn't apply. And let me preface this by a very interesting story in the Gemara. The Gemara says, there was this guy, the Gemara says in Saita, Minimin Ger Mitzri. Now, concerning a Mitzri, a convert from Egypt, the Torah says the third generation could come back to be a Jewish person. He can marry a Jewish person. In other words, if an Egyptian converts, they cannot marry a Jew. They have to marry an Egyptian convert. Their kids,
again,
can marry second generation. The third generation can marry into the Jewish people. That's what the halacha says. So Menimin, that was his name, Menimin Ger Mitzri, came to the Beis Din and he said, okay, in another generation, I could become part of the Jewish people. So Rabbi Kiva said to him, it's not true, you could do it right now. You could become a Jew. So I'd be to Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Gamliel. So Rabbi Yeshua said to him, because Egypt is not living in Egypt anymore. Sancherev ubilbil as kol ha'olam. Sancherev came and mixed up the whole world. Meaning like this. Halachically, today, if Egyptian goy wants to convert, I mean, just seriously, you know, halachically, to convert according to halacha, you convert him, and he can marry a Jewish girl. You don't have to wait three generations. When it says, L'yavei amin umayav b'kal Hashem, it doesn't mean a goy amin umayav. I mean, the ger from amin umayav cannot marry a Jewish girl, doesn't apply today. Today, they can marry a Jewish girl right away. The pasuk says they can't. So the Gemara says, because Sancherev, the powerful king of Sancherev, who lived in the time of Chizkiya Melech, he was Meshul Bekeeper, was a very powerful king. How did he strengthen his hold? He made the whole world move around. Because when you're not home in your own country, you're automatically weaker. So he took the Egyptians and moved them to Iraq. Iraq to Egypt. I hear this, to this country. He Basan Kherev, Ubilbo Eskola Ilam. He literally messed up the whole world. The Gemara says. He took the whole civilized world that he controlled at that time, and he made everybody move from place to place. So therefore, what Rabbi Yeshua said to Menim Ger Mitzri, he said, you're not Egyptian. There's no more Egyptians. Because after Sancherev came and mixed everybody up, so nobody knows who anybody is, and any Ger that converts is from the majority of the world, is not from Egypt. So therefore, Egypt doesn't exist anymore. The Egypt of olden times. So the Sefer Mitzvahs Gedolos, who was a Rishon, says the issur of going back to Egypt was only until Sancheriv. Once Sancheriv came and mixed up the whole world, there's no Egypt anymore. So then they would be allowed to go back to Egypt. That's how the answer. Well, the Rambam lived there, another Gedolei Yisrael lived there, or why you're allowed to go back to Egypt. Now it says in Halacha, if you go for business, then you are allowed to go to Egypt. You can even live there temporarily for business. What is the reason, okay, in a deeper sense, why did God not want the Jews to go back to Egypt? What was the problem? So according to Hasidus and Kabbalah, it's explained, which makes a lot of sense. And what explains why for business you're allowed to go back there. The purpose of a Jew, anywhere where they are, is to elevate the sparks of godliness that exists in that part of the world. We mentioned this is how the Mefarshim explained. The Gemara says, the reason why Hashem put the Jews in exile, in Golus, Kedei sheyarba aleihem gerim, simply means they should have a lot of converts. See, all over the world, you know, you get people to convert. But everybody knows it's anti-Jewish. Jews don't go out of, we're against people converting. You don't go out of your way to, so what does the Gemara mean that the whole reason of Golus is to get more Gedim? So the Mefarshim of the Gemara explain what it means is not Gedim of people. The sparks of holiness that exist in the countries. So if there's sparks of Kedusha in America and there are Jews in America doing mitzvahs, so they're elevating the sparks in America, in Europe, and wherever it is, you're elevating the sparks of Kedusha. When the Jews left Egypt, they emptied out with them Vayinatzles Mitzrayim. That Ezel says, they took out all the sparks of Kedusha that existed in Egypt. And if all the sparks of Kedusha were removed from Egypt when the Jews left Egypt, so Hashem says, what are you going back for? The only reason why a Jew is in a place is to elevate the sparks. But if there's no sparks left, what are you going back for? So Hashem says, you can't go back to Egypt. But for business, you're allowed to. Why? Because goods from other parts of the world, merchandise, ends up in Egypt. So you're allowed to be in Egypt to elevate those sparks of Kedusha coming from other countries that ended up in Egypt. So that's why for business, you would be allowed to. So the Jews, when they left Egypt, took out all the sparks of Kedusha of the civilized world at that time, and therefore the Hashem says you can't go back.
Only place in the world?
Yeah, that they emptied out completely, yeah. You ever notice, you don't see this in Israel, but in America, in neighborhoods that were very, very Jewish, and the Jews moved out, and it became a very colorful neighborhood, and basically the neighborhood became destroyed. So according to Kabbalah, the reason for that is because all the sparks of Kedusha the Jews took out when they did all the mitzvahs, and there was nothing left to do, so the Jews left. Forgot to send them to other places to do it, and that's it. The neighborhood became destroyed. Because the sparks of Kedusha were all taken out by the Jews doing mitzvahs in that country.
Like Spain.
Spain. Yeah. Even in America, you have places like that. Okay, so Hashem says like this. And by the way, this was one of the sins of Shlomo Melech officially, that he went back to Egypt to get horses. And then he ended up marrying Pariah's daughter. I mean, all the things that went on there. He can't have a lot of wives, because as the Pasuk is going to say, the reason for all these mitzvahs, the wives turned Shlomo Melech's heart away from Yiddishkeit, the old idol worshippings. And Kasev Ezov Le'yarba Le'meid, he can't have a lot of money, which also causes a person to be led astray from good things.
So yeah, should happen. We are not so rich.
Isn't that Pirkei Avot says that? Isn't that Pirkei Avot says that?
The what?
Too many wives is going to cause this. And too many.
Yeah. What do you think they got it from? This was first. It's they, what Pirkei Avos says is from this. What do you think it was? But that's what it says. Okay, now it says like this. V'hoye kishifte al kisei mamlachtei. There's another unique mitzvah that a king has. When he's going to be sitting on his throne, the kosev layas mishnah atayra zeso sefer, he has to write a second sefer Torah, okay? Lefnei ha-kohenim ha-levim, from the book of the kohenim ha-levim. Meaning like this, there was one authoritative chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote, he kept in the Beis HaMikdash, that was like the authority, because you know when you keep writing over, you make mistakes. So that was the ultimate kosher sefer Torah that everybody relied on. Now, there's a mitzvah on every single Jew. In order to explain the mitzvah of the king, you have to explain first there's another mitzvah. There's a mitzvah on every single Jew to write a sefer Torah. Okay? Later on, the last mitzvah in the Chumash is, in fact, he called the 613th mitzvah, to write a sefer Torah.
Everybody.
A
whole sefer Torah?
No, one sec. There's a mitzvah in the Torah for every Jew to write a sefer Torah. In addition to that, there was a mitzvah on a king to write a second sefer Torah as a king. And as a king had an obligation to have two sefer Torahs. Even if he got a sefer Torah's inheritance from his father, he still had to write a second sefer. If he didn't have any sefer Torahs, that's what it means, Mishnah HaTorah Zeis, he write himself two copies of the Torah. Two copies mean a king has an additional mitzvah in addition to everybody else. He has a king, and this sefer Torah is going to say exactly what he had to keep it with him the whole time, wherever he went, except in disrespectful places. But the king had to keep it always. He ate, sefer Torah had to be there. He sat, sefer Torah had to be there. Wherever he did. Now, the mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah, the Torah says like this, what's the purpose of writing a sefer Torah? Because you should learn. In the old days, in their books, what did they have? They had sefer Torah. And they had the oral law, which was oral. So many Rishenim hold, the Rosh, Ben Osh, others, and that's the Pesach Halach and Shulchan Aruch, that today, because we don't learn from a sefer Torah, and the Torah says the reason for every Jew to have a sefer Torah is to be able to learn. So now that we don't learn from a sefer Torah, we learn from books, you fulfill the mitzvah of writing a sefer Torah by buying svarim. Oh. That's what the Rishenim write. Okay? But the Rebbe once spoke, when the Rebbe came out with the sefer Torah, it's for the kids, everybody have a letter in the sefer Torah. The Rebbe asked the question, why don't we find G'dayli Yisroel, that were very, very careful in all mitzvahs. Yeah? Why don't we find that they wrote a sefer Torah? You've had many great tzaddikim, you don't find that they wrote the sefer Torah. Usually it's the rich people. Usually the rich people write sefer Torahs. But why don't we find, it's a mitzvah in the Torah. So yes, one second. Yes, you could be yated by buying sfarim, but still there is a mitzvah in the Torah. Why don't we find tzaddikim throughout generations? We don't find brought down that all tzaddikim wrote a sefer Torah. So the Rebbe explained it from a halachic perspective, by the way. And that's one of the reasons why the Rebbe, when he came out with the communal sefer Torahs, you know, everybody should have a letter in the sefer Torah, and the kids should have a letter in the sefer Torah, every Jew should have a letter in a communal sefer Torah. What's the inyan behind it? There's a din in Hilchos Shabbos like this. Let's say you're not allowed to carry this book on Shabbos. Yeah? If somebody carries it out, that's a created Shabbos. What's the din if two people carried out the book? Not one person. Two people carried out the book. So the Gemara says, Shnayim Sha'asu, if two people did the Malacha, Futurim. It's not biblically forbidden. It's rabbinically forbidden, not biblically forbidden. That means, if two people together flick a switch, it would only be rabbinically forbidden. Because, why? It's very simple. It's not the normal way of doing it. When it comes to Shabbos, to be biblically obligated in desecrating Shabbos, the Gemara says it has to be Melechus Machshavos, it has to be the normal way of doing it. Okay? In other words, like we learned in Hilchos Shabbos, if somebody, instead of flicking the switch, kicks the switch, it's not the normal way of doing it, so then it's only rabbinically forbidden. Unless it's a light with a foot pedal, or the way of doing it is with the foot, so then it would be biblically forbidden. Then if you did it with your hand, it would only be rabbinically forbidden. So the Gemara says, this is not loch in Hilchos Shabbos. Shnayim sha'asu. So if two people carried out this book together, none of it would be biblically chayiv. But, the Gemara says like this, the Gemara in Shabbos, what happens if there's a heavy table that one person cannot carry it out himself? And you need two people to carry it out. In other words, like this, to use Gemara language, ze yochol v'ze yochol. If this one could do it by himself, and this one could do it by himself, and they do it together, they're potter. Right. What happens? Ze ein yochol v'ze ein yochol. This guy cannot do it on his own, and this guy cannot do it on his own. And let's say it's a heavy table, yeah? You can't carry it yourself. Two people come on Shabbos and carry out the table. Then the din is they're both chayiv. Then they're both chayiv. It's very logical. If they can each one do it separately, then when they do it together, that's not the normal way of doing it. But if they can't do it separately, and they do it together, right? They're both chayiv. Not 50-50. Let's say the punishment would be to bring a carbon. Yeah, let's say they did it accidentally. Two people carry out a heavy table themselves accidentally. So they don't get stoned, because it's accidental. They have to bring a carbon. Do they share one carbon, or they both have to bring their own carbon? Halacha says, each one has to bring their own carbon. So the Gemara says, why? This is Gemara. Why? Because it's considered as if each one did the whole thing. Because you can't yourself, and you can't yourself, but together you do it, so it's like both of you did it all. Got it? That's what the Gemara, that's halacha. There's no argument about it. This is the halacha in the Gemara. Okay? Well, Rav Shimon argues, but the halacha in the Gemara is, zeh yachol, v'zeh yachol, they both could do it. Right? Then they're not chayiv. This one can't. This one can't. They do it together. They're both chayiv because it's considered as if each one did the whole thing. Got it? So now, in fact, the Rebbe said this when they divide up Shas every year on Yutis Kislev, everybody takes a mesechta. So the Rebbe said it many times, according to this halacha, it's a very interesting thing. You can't learn Shas a year. I can't learn the whole Shas a year. You can't. Nobody could do it themselves. So when everybody does it, and together you finish Shas, it's like everybody learned the whole Shas. Same thing with Tillim, by the way. You can't say the whole Tillim. You can't say the whole Tillim. So when you share it, you, based on this halacha we just said, it's like you both said the whole Tillim. Okay, now.
Now the letters of the Torah.
Oh, good, thank you. So now, not every person is able to write a Sefer Torah. It's very expensive. It could be $50,000, $60,000, right? Not every person has the means. So when you participate in buying a communal letter and a communal Sefer Torah, that everybody is all Eina Yochel, Eina Yochel, Eina Yochel, Eina Yochel, and they're all doing it together, so then halachically, it's considered as if you wrote an entire Sefer Torah. And that's what the Rebbe explained. We find tzaddikim that didn't do it because Lepoil, by joining a communal Sefer Torah, halachically it is as if they actually wrote it. Because not everybody else is able to do it. By the way, the mitzvah, by the way, when you say writing a Sefer Torah, it doesn't mean the king has to write it himself. Or the mitzvah, the Jew has to write it himself. You have to have it written for you. I mean, you could pay somebody to do it. You don't have to write the Sefer. The king didn't have to write two Sefer Torahs himself. Had somebody write it for him, obviously.
So, some people, they buy in the Torah, it's covered, that's it. That's it, isn't covered?
Yeah. Not only that, as people know, when you write a Sefer Torah, private Sefer Torah, and you donate it to the shul, to a shul, school, whatever, the proper minig is you don't donate it to the shul. You lend it to the shul.
Yeah.
Why? Because once you donate it to the shul, it's not yours anymore.
Yeah.
If you don't have a Sefer Torah anymore. But if you're lending it to the shul, so then it's still yours.
So better to lending, huh?
That's the minig. The minig brought down is to lend it, not to give it. Unless if it's a community Sefer Torah that everybody's giving money.
Yeah,
but I'm saying an individual who writes a Sefer Torah pays to write a Sefer Torah. It's brought down is from. The minig is you don't give it to an institution because then it's not yours and you don't have a Sefer Torah anymore. So you lend it to the shul and you make up a condition. Whatever you want to take it, you take it. That's it.
If somebody's giving you a seder or giving you chumash,
no,
and you're using it every day, I mean, you get the mitzvah or the person gave you the chumash?
No, I'm talking, there's a mitzvah to own a Sefer Torah.
No, I'm asking you another question.
If somebody gives you a present,
yes,
and you learn in the present,
yes,
who gets the mitzvah? The one who learns. And indirectly, the one who gave you the opportunity to learn by buying you the Sefer.
Suppose.
What happens if you teach me, and I teach him, and he teaches him, and he teaches her? Yeah? The schuz goes to the original, the rights. Copyright rights.
Yeah, it
all goes back to the first person. If you made somebody religious, and they made somebody else religious, and they made somebody else, it all goes back to the original guy. He had sold us chusim. That's the halacha, because they caused it to happen.
Avon. Avon.
Okay, so it says like this. V'ayah kishivta akisim amlachtay, when he's already sitting on the... And Rashi is, what do you mean, v'ayah kishivta? Rashi says, if you don't have a lot of wives, and you don't have a lot of money, you don't have a lot of horses, then you'll be able to sit properly, firmly, because you're doing what Hashem wants you to do, on the chair of His throne. The cost of laying, you should write Mishnah, Torah, Zesel, Sefer, and from which one? Lefnei HaKohenim HaLeviim, from the original Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote in the Beis HaMikdash.
Why did they say HaKohenim HaLeviim, and they say not Moshe?
Huh?
Why did they say?
Because that was where it was. It was in the Beis HaMikdash. So Rashi says in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that what does the king do with this? One copy he keeps in his treasury as he owns it, and the other one he goes with him. And it says, "V'hai se'imai," it has to be with him. And the Gemara is going to explain what this means. Kol yemei chayev, all the days of his life. Like he quotes over here like this. He goes. Yeah, it says over here the expression. He goes out to war, the Sefer Torah goes with him. He goes to the city, the Sefer Torah goes with him. He sits to judge, sits with him. He goes to eat, the Sefer Torah is with him. He goes to sleep, he takes off the Sefer, he doesn't wear the Sefer Torah, he keeps it next to him. He has to read it day and, he has to be with him day and night.
They say the Sefer Torah.
And it says, one minute, the king, it would be a very small Sefer Torah, and they would tie it to the king's arm, like a kameh, like an amulet, like a good luck thing. It says, Amr Chazal, Shoya Melech Kesha Sefer Torah Bizreya Kamin Kameh. David Amar had a Sefer Torah in his hand, it was obviously very small. Okay, we couldn't imagine these big bombs. They were very strong. But this was a, and it says why. And this, the Mepharshim, the Gemara says, this, the purpose of this was to humble the king, that he constantly needs to remember he is God's servant, and any decision he makes is based on Torah, and whatever he's doing is based on Torah. And like we know, David HaMelech always davened in Tillim to be modest, to be humble. And this is, as Chazal say, what's the purpose of him having the Sefer Torah? For this purpose, that he should have humility with him.
They say you shouldn't take the Sefer Torah in the bed, in the bedroom.
No, he took it next to the bed.
They can do that? The king can do that?
No, he took it where he... Yeah, he put it where he was allowed to put it. But it says, the Kohen by Kol Yemechayov, he has to read every day from the Sefer Torah, L'man Yilma, that he should learn the Yiras Hashem Alokov, to fear God. And the Gemara explained, what does it mean, L'man Yilmad? Because when you learn, then you will fear God. You can't expect to fear God if you don't learn. So the Torah says he should read it. L'man Yoma, because when he learns, then he'll be L'yiras Hashem Alakov. L'shma is called Divrei HaTorah Hazeis, to keep the whole Torah. V'sachukim ha'ele la'aseisim, and all the statutes of the Torah to keep them. So this is a very powerful, so to speak, halacha, that he should have the Sefer Torah for humility and so on and so forth. And then the Torah says like this: the vilti rum levavi meyachov, in order that the king should not, his heart does not become haughty over his brothers, meaning he doesn't think he's better than everybody else. Or the vilti sur min amitzi yom and small, that he shouldn't turn from commandments right or left. Leman yarich yomim amamlachtei, that he should live long on his kingdom, who Uvanav Bekalev, you saw him and his sons amongst the Jewish people. Okay? So what does it mean, Sur Min HaMitzvah? Rashi says it means even a rabbinic mitzvah, like a mitzvah of the Nevi'im, whatever. The king has to listen. And then it says like this, if he does this, the Pasuk says you're going to live long on his kingdom. He'll be a king for a long time. So the Gemara learns, the rule is, from Hain you hear lav, from no you understand yes, yes understand no, that if he doesn't do this, his reign of kingdom will not be long. And then it says another thing, hu ubanov, what do you mean hu ubanov? He says, if his, what do you mean him and his son? If his son is fit to be the king, the kid gets a Yerusha. You know, by kingdom, Torah says, hu ubanov, that it is a Yerusha. Unless if the son is not worthy of it. And in fact, the Rambam brings down from the Gemara, the Sanhedrin, so all the dinim of kings are in Sanhedrin. But the din is, that if there's an only son of the king, and there's no argument to fight who should be king, you don't even have to anoint him. He's automatically anointed. If there's fights, like Shlomo HaMelech had with Avshalom and all those fights that went on, so then you need to anoint the king to show everybody this is the king. But if the son comes first, and the main thing is not to be haughty, because if he's haughty, then he loses the power of being the king. Okay, just take a few minutes. It's like this. What are some of the honor of the king? It's very interesting how you have to, this is all from the mission, by the way. It's like this. You're not allowed to ride on the king's horse. You're not allowed to sit on his chair. You're not allowed to use his shadavit, the scepter. You're not allowed to wear his crown. You're not allowed to use anything of his tashmishim, of his kalim that he uses. When he dies, everything gets buried. Everything gets burnt. All his objects get burnt. The only one who could use his servants and maid servants is another king. Okay? A king, the wife of a king, meaning the widow of a king, cannot marry anybody else even one king cannot marry the widow of another king. Okay, once the king dies, his wife is forbidden to marry anybody else. You're not allowed to see him when he's naked. You're not allowed to see him taking a haircut. You're not allowed to see him in the bathhouse. You're not allowed to see him when he dries himself. And for instance, let's say he has to do yibum or chalitza. A king cannot do chalitza. Let's say the king has a brother that died without kids, right? He can't. Why? Because the girl has to spit in front of him. It's disrespectful to the king. And even if the king is meichel on his covet, the Gemara says like this, even if a king forgives his honor, ain't kvod ha-mochel. He has no right to forgive his own glory. A Talmid Chacham could, a Nasi to Machlekes, a Kayin could be meichel on his covet. A Kayin could say, yeah, give somebody else an aliyah. But a Melech can never give up his covet. If somebody dies, he never leaves the king, the palace, even to go to his own family's funeral. He has to take a haircut every day. They put a crown on his head. Like we said before, all the people come to him, except the Kohen Gadol can come when he wants. But in public, a Kohen Gadol has to stand up for the king. In private, the king stands up for the Kohen Gadol. I mean, there's a lot of dinim about all the respect that people have to give a king.
They get advice from the
king. By the way, that's part of the mitzvah that we learned today. Same tosim alecho melech. The king has to be over you. You have to give him the ultimate level of covet. What?
They get advice from the kohen also, kohen gadol.
He can ask advice whomever he wants. He could get advice.
Something you cannot do that you ask him.
He could. He's allowed to in private. He can ask advice from the Kohen Gadol. Like we said, when the Kohen Gadol came to the king in private, the king stood up for the Kohen Gadol. But the king can, yeah. By the way, the Gemara says that the Rambam brings it down also that Moshe Rabbeinu had a din of a melech. Moshe Rabbeinu had a din of a king. It says Avi'i b'shur a melech b'sasiv roshi om yachad shifte yisro. So the Medrash says in that Moshe Rabbeinu had a din of a king.
So then Mordechai was orphaned, yes? Or
no?
That's
Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu was the first halacha king, then Shaul, Yishbashis, and then Meluchu went to David HaMelech's family.
It's not that as David, Shevet Yehuda, Moshe Rabbeinu.
Right, that was afterwards when... If the dynasty of Melucha started, the dynasty had to come from David HaMelech. But individual, Shaul also was from David HaMelech. He had a din of a king.
Mordechai was in Israel either,
though. Huh?
Was Mordechai in Israel?
No, so I'm saying the whole concept of a king.
Nasi has a din of a king?
No, Nasi does not have a din of a king. Because in the Gemara Sanhedrin, there's an argument if a Nasi could be Meichel and his covet. But the Gemara says, "Afilu l'man di'amar." Even according to the opinion, says a nasi could forgive his covet. Everybody agrees a melech cannot be mivatel, because again, it's not the king. The king is representing God in the world, and that respect cannot be jeopardized, and therefore that stays permanent.
How about the president?